92.7 WMAY, Springfield's News and Talk. It is Mike Wimacher alongside Johnny Molson. Our next guest fights the good fight each and every day, trying her best to keep you informed. It's the host of The Readout on MSNBC. She has a new book out, Megger and Murley. Welcome to the show, Joy Reid. Good morning, Joy.
Hey, Mike and Johnny. Good morning.
Hi. My first question is, how the hell did you find time to write this book with all that you do on a day-to-day basis?
No, I don't sleep. I mean, basically insomnia is my friend.
When it comes to, you know, the title Megger and Murley, when it comes to the civil rights movement, we all know Malcolm X, MLK. Why is it that we don't know their story as much as those of MLK and Malcolm X?
Yeah, it's interesting because, contemporaneously at the time, Megger Evers was actually one of the best-known civil rights leaders in the country because, of course, he's the field secretary for the state of Mississippi, which is the most difficult place to do civil rights. And he was in communication and in conversation with Dr. King, who he greatly admired and was trying to fashion his movement off of King's movement. But I think what happens is when he is assassinated, you know, there are protests around the country from Philadelphia to New York. All around the country there are people protesting on the West Coast. But then, you know, by that summer, you're starting to have freedom rides going through Mississippi, Bob Moses' movement that then picks up even more in 64. By that August, you have the March on Washington in D.C. Then 2 weeks after that, you have the four little girls killed in that Birmingham church bombing by the Klan. And then, of course, you have the assassination of President Kennedy in November. I think events just overtook him and overtook his legacy. And then, of course, when Malcolm X and then Dr. King are assassinated, that's kind of game over. The assassination of Dr. King becomes the emblematic movement and the emblematic assassination of the whole civil rights era.
And there's a difference between where the civil rights movement was in 1963 when Medgar Evers is assassinated versus where it was in 1968 when Dr. King is assassinated. And had the national vibe changed in those five-ish years?
Absolutely. I mean, in 1963, these assassinations, culminating obviously with Kennedy's assassination, there was a sense among many Americans, many white Americans, that the United States was out of control, that particularly the South was out of control. Of course, Texas being where Kennedy is killed. And there was a sense of moral outrage among a majority, I would say, of white Americans about it. And that momentum actually leads to the ability to pass LBJ to pass the Civil Rights Act, and then when voting rights are still not being enforced and you see more brutality against John Lewis and other marchers in Selma, the Voting Rights Act. But by 1968, you've gotten kind of what we got after George Floyd, the kind of sense of exhaustion, of the sense that, you know, white America said, we're not interested in this anymore.
Right.
You've got two big pieces of legislation passed. We don't want to hear about this anymore. And kind of the same thing happened, really, in a way that's happening now. By the time he's assassinated, Dr. King has now come out against the Vietnam War, which most Americans supported. And he's a very deeply unpopular figure. His approval rating is very low. If you look on Gallup, he's one of the most hated men in America by the time that he's killed, whereas that was
That's
not
amazing.
The case in 1963. I think he got a Nobel Peace Prize in 64.
Wow. We're talking with Joy Reid. She's a host of The Readout on MSNBC and also has a new book out, Megger and Murley. You actually had a chance to speak with the Evers family for this book. What was that experience like for you?
It was, you know what? It was wonderful. The person who kind of inspired me to do the book in the first place was Murley Evers Williams, and it was interviewing her really for my previous show, AM Joy, on MSNBC.
Okay.
That's how I got to meet her in person. And then, I worked through her children, her two living children. Her eldest son unfortunately died of cancer many, many years ago. But they were the ones who facilitated me to be able to speak with her, both on the phone and in person. I did that at Van's house in California. And it was really a wonderful experience because she's a living icon of the civil rights movement. She ultimately became the executive, the chairman of the board of the NAACP. So she became a civil rights leader herself. So she's an icon. So being able to work with her, and they gave us total access to their archives, and we just sat around in those archives. Yeah, I'm a nerd. This is like going to the library as a middle school student, you know. So I was in my element. It was great being in the Library of Congress, everything. So, yeah, it was a great experience.
Joy, why did it take 30 years for his killers to be convicted? Why did it take 30 years?
Well, this is one of my favorite aspects and my favorite stories of the book. The reason it took 30 years, in part, is some of the same trends we're seeing change the trajectory in politics now. Number one, in 1963, they put this man, Delebecq, was on trial. He obviously did it. He was bragging that he did it. Yeah. But he knew he would be acquitted because women were not allowed to serve on juries in the 1960s until 1968. So he knew he would get an all-white male jury. Because voter suppression of black folks, if you can't register to vote, you can't be in the jury pool. So they ensured through that all juries would be white men. So you would be acquitted in 10 minutes. So he assumed that would happen. But one of the things that had changed by 1963 is the GI Bill. White and black soldiers who had gone off to war come back, and part of the GI Bill helps you go to college. So by 1963, you have some college-educated white men, more than you would have had in the 1950s the 1940s. So the jury in 1963 has some collegiate men on it. They hang the jury. You get a hung jury, which never happened. So they try him again in 1964. The Hinds County DA says, we're going to try this again. They get a second hung jury. Almost never happens. It's like unheard of. But I think that the intellectual or the educational composition of the jury is part of the reason that you see a change. That's one of the things that's also changing American politics, right? You have a cleavage between college-educated white voters and non-college white voters. Same thing in Mississippi. Fast forward 30 years later, when they try him a third time, because the jury's at hung, the case is still technically open. It's not double jeopardy. So they're able to reopen the case because this man keeps talking about killing Medgar Evers for 30 years. He tries to write a book about it. He tries to run for governor about it. He tells everybody who will listen to him that he killed Medgar Evers. You add that to the fact that they find the gun, which had gone missing, and Murley keeps the transcript. So by the time that they get this new information that it turns out the state of Mississippi through something called the Sovereignty Commission, which was a statewide spy organization. I know this sounds crazy. They were helping his defense. They were paying for his lawyers. The state of Mississippi was both prosecuting Della Beckwith and helping Della Beckwith. And the jury still hung. But because of all of that, when this journalist named Mr. Mitchell finds that information about the Sovereignty Commission, they try him a third time. But what has changed? Black people can vote now in Mississippi. So the jury now has college-educated white members, it has women, and it has blacks. And a jury composed like that convicts this man in 1994, literally 30 years after his previous trial.
Joy Reid, thank you so much for sharing your time, and this book is so important. I would really highly recommend people go out and pick up Medgar and Murley. We appreciate what you do each and every day with the readout on MSNBC. I'm a huge fan, so it's been an honor to talk to you. On the way out, how are you mentally preparing yourself for election night this year?
Listen, let me tell you something. I'm trying to cure my insomnia. I have gummies now to help me sleep because I'm going to need to be sleeped up because it's going to be a long night. I am preparing myself in a... Listen, I'm trying to get back with my trainer. I need to do some jumping jacks. I mean, everybody train up and pray up and sleep up because it's going to be a long night.
We're thinking about you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and Kornacki and all the rest of the crew, we're thinking of you, and thank you for all that you do.
He doesn't sleep. Oh, he doesn't need sleep. We keep him in a cryogenic thing. I can't tell you guys. That's kind of off the record, We just break him out when we need him.
That is fantastic. Joy Reid, thank you for the time, and best of luck with everything. Take care. That is Joy Reid, host of MSNBC's Readout and the new book, Medgar and Murley. Great conversation there, and definitely highly recommend you check out the book.